Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the baby boomers when we come back. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was about 73 days for every man, woman, and child on planet Earth. Today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, these global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, disease, plague, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years under the Club of Rome plan. Now, in Revelation chapter 6, the God of Israel told us exactly the same thing in essentially the same words: false prophets, war, famine, and disease. Now, back in 1920, about half of our people lived on the land. They lived on the land as subsistence farmers, producing their own food and food to feed the rest of the world and you and me. Today, we Americans have now chosen to live in our cities. And only about 3% of us now live on the land, and 97% of us then are living in the cities and are no longer self-sufficient in our food production. Now, we Americans produce grain for export, all right, but then we turn around and import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. And our food supply is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this global 2000 world population control program. These globalists with the genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say, let them die for their cause, and let us live for ours. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Our subsistence and survival school is available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we've been talking about retirement of the baby boomers. There's about 77 million of them. They were born between 1946 and 64. So for that 18-year period, those people that are now coming of age to retire begins in the year 2008. And then from 2008, for the next 18 years, that's until 2026, those 77 million people are going to sign up for Social Security. And of course, the concern is that it will bankrupt the system. I don't think that it's going to bankrupt the system, and I told you that the government's going to pay you every dime that they've promised you. They're just going to print it, like Mugabe down in Zimbabwe. It's just that it won't buy anything. Now, keep in mind that we've got three sources of income to fund our retirement. Maybe you've got a fourth or a fifth, but generally we're relying upon our pension program from our employer. You work for Bank of America, they probably have a pension program. You work for United Airlines, they used to have a pension program. Now, there was a time about 30 years ago when about half of the employers in America had a pension program. So if you were fortunate enough to work for, oh, say, Pacific Bell, or you were working for United Airlines, or for some big corporation, you might have a retirement program, like railroad retirement for the railroad workers, things like that. Well, today it's down to 20%. So you baby boomers out there, you know, if you stop and look at it pragmatically, only one out of five of you has that option for your retirement. And maybe it's a good one, maybe it's not so good. But in any event, that's one of the three. Now, you've got personal savings, Social Security, and your company retirement. Those are the three areas that you're going to receive money to fund your retirement years. Now, if only one in five can draw a pension from his company, then 80% of us are left out in the cold, aren't we? So 80% of the baby boomers cannot rely upon your company retirement. Now 20% of you are home free, but 80% of you are left out in the cold. So that leaves you with just Social Security and your personal savings. Now, the average baby boomer today has $42,000 in personal savings, which is about 1 year. If you're an average person, you're making about $40,000 a year. If you're making $100,000 a year, you're in the top 5%. And if you're making under $40,000 a year, you're below the 50% line. If you're making $40,000 or more, well, you're above that. So, you know, that's about a 1 year supply at the average rate of income and expenditures. That'd keep you for about 1 year, and you're preparing for about a 10 to 15 year retirement. You're going to retire at age 65 and probably live to 75. That's average. That's 10 years. You might take early retirement and retire at 62 and die at 78 or 80, which would take you up to around 15 years. So you've got to fund 15 years, and 1 year just isn't enough off of your savings. So 4 out of 5 of you don't have a company pension, and most of you only have 1 year. On average, you've only got 1 year's worth of savings. All right, so now that takes care of 2 of the 3. That leaves us then with Social Security, and that's what we were talking about last time. Is Social Security going to be there to fund your retirement? And the answer to that is a resounding no, it is not. Now, for the year 2007, everybody that's on Social Security, sit back and relax, you're home free. 2008, you're all right. 2012, probably pretty good. But at some point in time, some indefinite point in time, we're going to go into a period of hyperinflation, which in historical times has occurred in as little as 3 days. Now, in Rhodesia, it's been building up to this 3,000% inflation rate every year over the last 10 years. I mean, it's been a little at a time over a long period of time. But in Brazil, they had 5,000% inflation. It set in 3 days. Now, that's how volatile that thing can be. We've had hyperinflation in this country. In 1783, the continental currency collapsed. And then they just printed money and went out and bought whatever they wanted. That's what governments do. And then they pass laws and they say, if we catch you using any other kind of money or barter or something else, we'll throw you in jail. So that's where Mugabe is today. They're printing money, and if they catch you using some other form of money, well, then that's treason against the state, and so they punish you for it. And you can rest assured that there'll be pious-sounding laws like that here in the United States. We've had them before, and we'll have them again. So my conclusion was that I needed to take care of myself. I don't think I can rely upon my company pension. I didn't have one of those. I don't think I can rely upon my savings, because if hyperinflation wipes them out, that's a dead-letter issue. Whether or not Social Security simply can't make the payments. See, I think when they talk to us in the mainstream press, they're saying, well, they've promised more than they can deliver, so they're going to have to raise taxes or something. You people haven't equated or put into the equation this inflation, purchasing power. You go to public school, Katie Couric gives you a report on the news. She never brings up inflation. And I never tell you what's going on here with inflation. The other day I showed you the numbers from 1960 to 2000. If you had stocks paying you compound interest from 1960 to 2000, and you paid your 28% capital gain tax on all of the money, just like the system says that you're supposed to, from 1960 to 1980, from 1960 to 2000, if you paid your taxes and if you had 4.7% inflation rate, which is what the average was for that 40 years, plus 5% on the Dow Jones, you lost 40% of your $10,000 purchasing value on your investment in 1960. You lost 40% of it. And that's if you did everything that the government and the system and your school teacher and everybody else told you to do. So I listen to this crap all the time. People, you know, tell you, well, you need to invest in stocks for the long term because here are the gains. Yeah, they tell you about the gains. It's kind of like the crap table, you know, or like hitting the lottery. When you hit the lottery, there's all this hoop to do, you know. Hey, this guy won $200 million. He was one guy out of multiple millions. Your chances of winning the lottery are 1 in 82 or 3 or 4 million, something like that. 1 in 80 million. So the odds against you are 80 million to 1. Nobody ever goes out and interviews the 80 million losers they interview the one winner. I don't deny that there's a winner in the lottery. Hell, my grandmother was a winner in Social Security. For the amount of money that my grandparents paid in from 1940 or 35, whenever they started paying, until 1950, when my grandmother started drawing out, she drew out more the first year than they ever paid into the system. Hell of a deal for her. Unfortunately, today, you're paying in more than you're drawing out. And I showed you that number the other day. Whether you're making minimum wage, or whether you're a blue-collar worker making $20 an hour, or whether you're a white-collar worker making $30 or $60 an hour, you're a net loser. And the more money you make, the more money you lose paying into Social Security. Anybody that pays into Social Security is brain dead. Brain dead. You people can't count. If you're a doctor, a dentist, a lawyer, somebody with letters after your name, and you're paying $12,000 a year into a retirement program that is going to pay you back 20 cents on the dollar if it's still functioning when you retire, son, you're mentally unstable. You can't count. I know somebody's going to say, well, I have to pay into it. It's the law. It is not. It is not. There is no law that required you to join Social Security. And if you want to check it out, the law is in Title 42 of the U.S. Code, Section 301 through 335. It's a voluntary program. Nobody's required to participate or to join the system. Now, it may be that you walked into General Motors, and General Motors said, we won't hire you unless you've got a Social Security account. See, they're chartered by the government. They're a corporation. And the government and the corporations, like the pharmaceutical industry and the government, they work together like a hand in a glove. And that's the way that game is played. I don't deny that. That's what happened to me. They came to me when I wanted to become a newspaper boy with the Humboldt Standard. And I said, I want to be a paper boy. And Wayne Davenport, he was the route manager, he said, well, you got to have a Social Security number. So I rushed down to get one. But the government didn't require it. And there's no law that requires that. So it's voluntary. And it's the mark of the beast. That's the other half of the coin over here. There's choices that we make today, and then there's going to be ramifications, and there's going to be sadness at some other point in time. I mean, that's just the way life is. We make choices, and then you got to live with them. So now, here's your three choices. You've got Social Security, pensions, and savings. You don't have savings, and your Social Security is upside down, and unless you've got a pension program from a pretty A1, like railroad retirement. Now, I think that's a pretty A1 sterling retirement program. But no matter how much money you've got into railroad retirement, it's dead in the water with hyperinflation. Now, I told you this the other day, so let me run it by you one more time. Let's suppose you got $400,000 in your 401k. And you're sitting back, and you know how much that's going to buy. And you're sitting there saying, hey, I'm pretty well set. Because $400,000 in your 401k is $40,000 a year for 10 years. You retire at 65, you die at 75, you've got $40,000 a year, plus the interest that it develops, you know, every year. So you're sitting pretty fat and pretty happy. Now, hyperinflation sets in here, and it costs in Zimbabwe. Now, keep this in mind. In 1980, the Zimbabwe dollar and the American dollar were at par value. Today, the American dollar is worth 50% less than it was. From 1980 to 2000, it lost half of its value. Then it lost a third of its value between 2000 and 2006. The Zimbabwe dollar has lost its value until today. To buy a gallon of gasoline in Zimbabwe is 1.2 million Zimbabwe dollars. So if in 1980 you had $400,000 in your Zimbabwe account, today it would take $1.2 million just to buy a crummy gallon of gas. So you got wiped out, didn't you? You know, for practical purposes, you're wiped out. Now, that's what hyperinflation is going to do to your savings. Now, listen to Social Security. Here's the numbers. This is an official report, went into the House Ways and Means Committee. It's a study done by the National Center for Policy Analysis. It was delivered to the House Ways and Means Committee on Thursday, May 19th, 2005. And so as they say down at the Blue Room, read them and weep. Here it is. It's called the cash flow problem. In a pay-as-you-go system, what matters most is cash flow. And the cash flow drain that elderly retirement programs portend is not a problem of the distant future, as some people argue. The problem has already begun. Social Security and Medicare have been receiving more in payroll taxes than they have been paying out in benefits for several decades. But last year, in 2004, the two programs combined spent more money than they took in, requiring a general revenue subsidy of $45 billion. The magnitude of the deficits in these two programs will soar in the years to come. Now, for those who believe that Social Security and Medicare are in sound financial condition for decades to come, figure one represents a sobering picture. In fact, the latest numbers from the trustees of the Social Security and Medicare system are staggering. In 2010, the federal government will need $127 billion in additional funds to pay the promised benefits. 5 years later, in 2015, the size of the annual deficit will double. 5 years beyond that, in 2020, it will double again. And then, in just 15 years, the federal government will have to raise taxes, reduce other spending, or borrow $761 billion to keep its promises to America's senior citizens. As the years pass, the size of the deficits will continue to grow. Without changes in payroll, worker taxes, or senior citizens' benefits, the shortfall in Social Security and Medicare compared to promised benefits will top more than $2 trillion in 2030, $4 trillion in 2040, and $7 trillion in 2050. These deficit numbers include projected inflation, and yet even in 2004 dollars, the numbers are still staggering. Valued in today's dollars, the annual Social Security deficit will top $50 billion in 2020, $250 billion in 2030, $400 billion in 2050. Adding Medicare's deficits, the federal government will need more than $500 billion in 2020, $1 trillion in 2030, $2 trillion in 2050 to fund elderly retirement programs alone. Now, I know these trillions over here are starting to boggle our minds, but a trillion is 1,000 billion. President Kennedy presented the first $100 billion budget to Congress in 1961. It's the first $100 billion budget. Today, your federal budget runs around $3 trillion a year. So that's that's 30 times more than President Kennedy projected or proposed back in 1961. Now, that's what happens when we get into geometric progression, and that's what the problem with the Ponzi scheme is. See, it starts off 1, 2, 4, 8, 16. That's pretty benign. But when you start getting up to 1632, 6428, it starts to double pretty rapidly. And to give you an illustration, there's a little exercise for it. One time there's a story, you know, my old daddy, my granddaddy, I guess, told me the story. He said, son, which would you rather have, $1 million or a penny doubled 32 times? So when you listen to the words come out of somebody's mouth, a penny doubled 32 times, you say, well, 32 and 32 is 64 cents, and $1 million is a lot more than 64 cents, and so, yeah, I'd rather have $1 million. So my granddad said, well, you're a fool. You don't understand geometric progression. And so he sat me down and he said, I want you to multiply this out. Now, I'm just a little kid. I'm probably, you know, fourth grade, maybe fifth. I'm about 10, 11 years old, something like that. And so we started working. We took a penny and we 1 times 1 is 1, and 1 times 2 is 2, and 2 times 2 is 4, and 2 times 4 is 8, and 2 times 8 is 16, and so on. And so you keep multiplying that out. And he told me a little story. He said, and it worked like this. A little boy took his took his daddy's horse down to the farrier to have him shoed. And so the farrier, he says, well, little boy, you're just lucky today because we got this special. And the special is if you buy at the regular price, it's $12 to shoe the horse. But I'll give you the horseshoes free. And so he handed the little boy the horseshoes. He said, now the horseshoes are yours. All I'm going to do is charge you a penny a nail to put these nails in the horseshoes. There's eight in each shoe, so there's 32 nails. So we're going to double this 32 times, and you can take the change and go down and buy ice cream. Little boy thought that was a good idea, so he signed on. And so they put in the first nail. That was a penny. Second nail is 2 cents, and the third nail is 4 cents. And you know, so it goes for the first eight nails. It's 1, 2, 4, 8. 16, 32, 64, 128. Well, now if you add those up, the last nail was $1.28. If you add those up, you've got $2.55 invested in the first horseshoe. So now when you go to put the second horseshoe on, you know, it's $2.56, and then it's $4 or $5.12, and then $10.24, and $20.48, and pretty soon. Well, just keep working on that, boys and girls, because that 40th nail is $40 million. $40 million. Now, that's called the magic of compounding. And that's where you, remember we talked about this in the first program in this series. We took 5%, we put $10,000 into stocks at 5%, multiplied that out, compounded annually for 40 years from 2000 from 1960 to 2000, and we ended up with nearly $75,000, sevenfold increase. I mean, your money is doubling and doubling and doubling, and it's just a marvel. Hell of a deal. And that can go on for a while, but then it ultimately has to come to an end because it will consume. This is a little number for you. If you took a penny compounded from the time of Christ to today, 2,000 years, a penny compounded, it would consume all the wealth of the earth. So this compounding, this is why in the Bible you have to have a year of release and a jubilee. You got to go back to zero. You got to reset the calendar. You got to reset the clock every 50 years. And if you don't do that, well, whoever it is that's got control of the marbles is going to end up with all of the marbles. So Franklin Roosevelt, back in 1933, he came up with this Social Security system, and they didn't put this pay-as-you-go thing in there by accident. This isn't a funded system. This is a pay-as-you-go program. So they started off, and they had 80 people paying into it in 1940. 80 people paying in for everybody drawn out. Hell of a deal. By 1945, they had 45 people paying in for everybody drawn out. By 1957, it was 16 to 1. In 1997, it hit 3.2 to 1. It's down to around 3 to 1 today, and it's headed to 2 to 1 by 2020 and 1 to 1 by 2030. Now, you know, you don't have to be a Rhodes Scholar to figure out that as you have fewer and fewer people paying in and more people drawn out, that you've got to raise taxes. And that's what's happened over the years. Back in 1950, the tax rate was $81 a year. And today, the maximum tax rate is around $12,000 a year. And they've raised it from $3,000 a year to over $80,000 a year is what they're taxing as the tax base. So you have fewer people paying in. They've raised the taxes and they've raised the tax rate. See, in 1940, the tax rate was 1%. Today, it's 16%. And they're going to have to raise it to 32% and 64% and 128% and 256% and so on down the line in order to maintain this Ponzi scheme. Well, obviously, that is unsustainable, as the president likes to word it. It's unsustainable. Now, your balance of payments deficit is unsustainable. Your national debt is unsustainable. Your Social Security system is unsustainable. The Medicare system is unsustainable. And your retirement program is unsustainable. How do you like that? That's why I elected not to retire. There's no retirement in the cards for George Gordon because I was born too late in the Ponzi scheme in order for me to come out. So I showed you the numbers here the other day. In my case, by 1978, I'd paid in $12,000. and some change, 12,000 and change. I opted out in 78. Had I stayed in the system, I'd have been paying the maximum amount in from 79, 83, 85, 96, 99, till 2002 when I could have retired. All right, now, that was another $141,000. Now, thankfully for me, I didn't put in that $141,000. I kept it. So I lost my $12,000, but I saved $141,000 in the process. And today, had I paid in the full $153,000, I would have been eligible to draw out at about $805 a month for 120 checks. I would have gotten about $100,000 back. So I would have paid $53,000 to have somebody in Bethesda, Maryland, or Baltimore, Maryland, write me 120 checks. I determined years ago I didn't need that. Nor did I want it. And that's where everybody today is. And all of you young people that are paying into the program today aren't going to get back diddly squat because the system's unsustainable. It's going to collapse. So whatever you pay in, you've lost. For those of you that are drawing right now today, you can continue drawing until about 2020 if everything continues on the way it is. And then it's going to run out of money. But I would submit to you that it's not going to run out of money. Hyperinflation is going to come into play first. In fact, the government's already playing the hyperinflation game by financing the rebuilding in New Orleans, the two wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, and the federal deficits along with Social Security and Medicare. Now, take a look at this. In 2004, they needed $45 billion. And then in 2010, they're going to need $155 billion, $780 billion in 2020, $2 trillion in 2030, $4 trillion in 2040, and $7 trillion in 2050. Boys and girls, these are numbers that aren't in the cards. There isn't enough money out there to fund it, period. So in order to come up with these kinds of numbers, they'll just run the printing presses and they'll print it off all right. But just because the government sends you a check for $800 does not mean that there is a corresponding amount of pinto beans down here in Walmart store. At least not for all of you. So early on, you know, today, you can take the dollars that you have and you can go down to Walmart and cash them in for pinto beans. Remember I went through the pinto bean story with you the other day? And you'll be in here and you'll convert yours to pinto beans and you'll get 100 cents on the dollar. The next guy that comes in here is going to pay 46 cents next year for the pinto beans. So he's going to get 10% less. And so on down the line. And then ultimately, hyperinflation sets in and you get 3,000% a year. That means that the price of the pinto beans goes up 30 times. If pinto beans are 40 cents a pound today and we get 3,000% inflation, so you take 40, that's times 30 would be $12 a pound. So it'll go from 40 cents to $12 a pound, you know, in 1 year. Then next year they'll do the same thing. They'll go from $12 a pound times 30, and they'll be $360 a pound the following year, and then times 30 again will take them up to $10,800 a pound. So at the end of 3 years, at 3,000% inflation, that's 30 times inflation, it goes from 40 cents to $10,800 a pound in 3 years. Now, if your mind is kind of boggled by that, well, it happens every time there's a hyperinflation. It boggles everybody's mind. Businesses break down. Exports cease. Unemployment soars. Shortages are rampant. Starvation. Rioting in the streets. Martial law. Political upheaval. That's what comes from this kind of process. And it isn't accidental. I don't think that people like George Bush and Ted Kennedy and Dianne Feinstein, these are all smart people. And these people don't talk to you about hyperinflation and about the 4.7% inflation and the core model and so on. They talk to you about how the economy is sound and everything's going along fine and you know stocks are going up and you know that stock market's another piece of crap. You know if you were going to maintain the purchasing power that you had in March of 2000, the stock market would have to be at 17,000 just to equal what it was in March of 2000. And it isn't. It's at 13.5 as of last night. and it's moving sideways. And the plunge protection team is in there at least once a week and sometimes 2 or 3 days a week to jack it up with taxpayer money. And so the thing is unsustainable, and they're holding it off until the time is right. And when it's right, they're going to pull the plug just like they did in 1929. And when they pull the plug, all the rest of us are going to take it in the shorts. So keep in mind that this Social Security cash flow problem isn't something that's coming in the future. It already started in the year 2004. That's when your first deficit came up, $45 billion. All right, now it gets a little worse as we go along here. These deficit numbers include projected inflation, and yet even in 2004 dollars, as I showed you, it's more. If there was no inflation from now on, you would still be insolvent. So even if you came up with Ben Bernanke and he balances the budget with George Bush, and for the next 40 years, we operate with totally balanced budgets, and we're fiscal conservatives, you cannot pay the debt that's already been incurred. Now, there isn't any reason for these guys to back off on inflation. In fact, they have been jacking inflation up, which tells me they're going into hyperinflation, saying pay all this debt off. So they're going to pay all the debt off. And then you're going to take it in the shorts, because inflation in reality is a tax. It's an inflation tax. So they're just going to tax you everything, and it comes out legal beagle. Everybody has done just exactly what they said they're going to do. It's not the government's fault that Walmart raised their prices from 40 cents to $10,800 a pound on pinto beans. The government never told you that the money they gave you was going to buy any particular number of pounds of pinto beans. And I challenge you to go to Title 42 or Title 26 and show me that statute. Now, deficits as a percentage of other federal revenues will take up when we come back. Let me give you a reminder here that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide, over the Internet. And if you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website, georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, go to our homeschooling page on our website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and that can be accessed through the website as well. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, please call the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. All right, now the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. And the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse and recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that those authors or publications that we endorse and recommend are going to reciprocate. That's because most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans whose viewpoint is not necessarily wholly endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, notice I said here the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. We check these numbers out, you know, as best we can. sometimes we make a mistake and somebody will send us an email and say, hey, listen, that's not correct. So if you hear some numbers or you hear some facts or you hear something here on the law and you disagree with it, check your source. Make sure that you've got facts, if you would, please. And then forward those facts to me, and I will make needed corrections. You know, if I make a mistake and I tell you, hey, the federal budget deficit, you know, this year is $32 trillion, well, that's an error. Sometimes we make an error in reporting. You know, sometimes you'll make a typographical error and put the comma in the wrong place or the decimal in the wrong place, and then when I get the copy and I make a report and I give a wrong number, you know, and it's pretty glaringly obvious, you know, that's not true. And sometimes you may have better sources of information. I mean, hell, you may be in the government's inner circles over here, and maybe you know something that we don't. And if you do, why, feel free to send me an email, send me a letter, call me on the phone, and say, hey, listen, you said on the air the other day, blah, 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 and that's not true, Mr. Gordon. The correct number is, or the correct fact is, or, and then give us an opportunity to correct that if you would, because we strive diligently here to give you straight from the shoulder, honest to God facts, without trying to editorialize and tell you, well, here's what you need to do. You know, I'm not telling you who to vote for in the next election. I don't care whether you vote or not. Now, we have recommendations that we make and courses of action that we follow, and we have our personal opinions here, but our objective here is to deliver solid facts, and then you decide, well, what do you want to do with them? You know. And so, as we're talking about baby boom retirement over here, you know, I listen to Katie Couric just like the rest of you, and if I listen to that cheerleader over there, well, I would conclude that everything is just fine. There isn't a problem in the world. And I just thought I'd share with you here that, now this is a congressional report put in here by an analysis from the National Center for Policy Analysis. And they're not the only guys that are writing these reports. I just selected this one to report on because they've got these neat graphs in here, and I'm giving you the numbers. I've also seen these same numbers in other publications, both government and non-government publications. So they're not lying to you. They're telling us the truth. Their numbers vary. You know, one guy will say, well, we're going broke in the year 2010. The next guy says, no, it's not until 2012. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's like saying, well, you've got cancer and you're going to die in 90 days. No, he's got at least 6 months. Boys and girls, you know, when you've got cancer and you're down to 90 days or 6 months, I mean, you're getting cut off from lots and lots of years, you know. That 90-day difference isn't all that important. We need to do something about this cancer. We got to cure this thing here if we're going to live for another 20 or 30 years. Now, if you're going to survive this upcoming worldwide financial collapse, well, then you got to take some action. And if you're happy with the program just the way it is, that there's no problem with that. Hell, get after it. That's a decision that you have to make, and that's the way most people are going to do it. Nobody is going to take any precautions or make any preparations for the sinking of the Titanic until after it hits the iceberg. But by the time it hits the iceberg, it's too late to make any preparations. That's your problem. See, if you're going to wait until the thing occurs, like waiting for the Great Depression, if you're going to wait until 1933 when you've already hit bottom, it's a little bit too late for you to prepare for it. The guys that prepared for the Great Depression were doing that in 25, 26, 27, 28, and 29. I mean, they were doing that years and years in advance. And then those guys came out pretty well, but they were very, very rare. There weren't very many people preparing for it before the fact. Now, taking a look here at deficits, the combined budget shortfalls for Social Security and Medicare are so large that it is difficult to comprehend what these numbers mean. Figure 2 presents the projected deficits as a percentage of federal income tax revenues. What it shows is that the combined Social Security and Medicare deficits will equal almost 10% of federal income taxes in just 5 years. Roughly, this means that if the federal government is to keep its promises to seniors, it will have to stop doing 1 in every 10 things that it does today. No, so the president flipped up to Minneapolis the other day. I saw him on Katie. And he said, we're going to rebuild this bridge. And Congress dutifully went to work, and they earmarked $250 million to rebuild this bridge. Boys and girls, $250 million is chump change. Chicken feed. Chicken feed. It doesn't even come up on the radar screen. And then where are they going to get the money? I mean, here's the federal government with a budget deficit this year of, I don't know, they're telling you it's $245 billion, I think is the number I saw the other day, but the real number is $750 billion. So they lie to you about what the deficit is, but hell, even if the deficit was $250 billion, which is what they're admitting to, where in the hell are you getting the $250 million? Here's Medicare, which is insolvent already, and the president says, hey, let's add another $1 trillion to it in drug benefits for the elderly. Okay, well, you people are living the life of Riley today, and you're borrowing like there's no tomorrow, but I just want to tell you that historically, I'm not a prophet, so I'm not going to tell you the outcome of your actions. But historically, it has led to financial collapse, financial ruin in every country where it's ever been tested. What makes you think that anything's going to be different here in the United States? It spelled financial collapse and disaster in 1783. The last time we tried it in this country, it didn't work. What makes you think it's going to work any better in 2013 than it did in 1783? If you got any insight on that, send it to me, would you? Now, that's 10%, and that's over the next 5 years. 10 years later in 2020, you know, now a lot of you people are probably sitting out there saying, well, yeah, that's a long time, 2020. Hell no, it's 12 years. Think back 12 years from 2007. It's 1995. Hell, 1995 was just the other day. I remember 1995. Now, of course, you know, if you're 12 years old, you know, that's a long time ago. When you get to be 70, 12 years ago was what? Hell, that was just the other day. Well, just the other day added on 12 years. Here comes 2020 now. 10 years later in 2020, the combined Social Security and Medicare deficits will equal 29% of federal income taxes. That's pushing on to a third, you know. It's over a fourth. At that point, the federal government will have to stop doing almost one-third of what it does today. By 2030, about the midpoint of the baby boomer retirement years, federal guarantees to Social Security and Medicare will require one in every two income tax dollars. That's 50%. By 2050, it's going to require three out of every four tax dollars. No, that isn't going to fly. Let me put it in perspective for you. Let's suppose you believe in Social Security, you know, like you believe in Santa Claus and Christmas. And as a result of that, you want to go out here and do your part. So you go out, you're that 3.2% or 3.2 workers, and you just work your heart out to support that one retiree. Pretty soon it'll be down to 3-1, and you just double the stroke and you get out there and work hard, and now there's three of you and you're supporting this one retirement worker. And then pretty soon, Social Security goes to where it's 2-1. So it takes two of you now. You got to work, you know, twice as hard now to support that one worker. And then pretty soon, it's just you. It's just 1-1. You got to go out and work and pay all of your money in to support one other worker. Then pretty soon, you got to work to support two other workers. And then pretty soon, it's all of your labor working to support four. And then you're supporting eight. And then you're supporting 16. Then 32. Boys and girls, I submit to you, you're just going to run out of energy. There isn't enough energy in your body to support 2, 4, 8, 16, 32 people. That's the magic of compounding, and that's what Social Security and Medicare is all about. This thing is upside down. It's a done deal. Now, fortunately, many of the baby boomers are saying that they're not going to retire. What they're concerned about is that they're going to continue working. That was my conclusion. I took a look at the numbers here 10, 15 years ago, and I said, there's no retirement for little Georgie Gordon. I better keep working and saving and putting away some pinto beans to take care of myself and take care of my family when this thing turns turtle. And that's what I suggest that every family do, which is what we were all doing in 1940. Every American family had a supply of food, and they had their mortgages paid. Those people were free and clear. Free and clear meant that we don't have any debt. They might not have a job, but they didn't know anything. Now, that was in 1940. Today, all of you baby boomers, you know, you people are up to your eye sockets in debt. Now, here's what that boils down to. And you see it unraveling right now with this credit crunch coming on. You bought a house over here the other day for no money down with an adjustable rate mortgage, and the interest rate went from 2 to 5%, which more than doubled your house payments. So you started off paying $500, and now you're paying $1,200 a month. Now, for many of you people out there, you know, you took on a $1,200 a month mortgage, and it doubled up to $2,400, and now you can't pay it, and so you're getting foreclosed on. First of all, it wasn't very, very, very wise of you to go into debt to start with, but, you know, the people that have orchestrated this financial debacle are not dumb people. They are people who have a goal in mind. And the collapse of the world economy is a part and parcel with their ultimate end goal of creating this new world order and one world government. You've got to have something that keeps everybody's mind off of what's really going on. So to keep your minds off of economics, they've got these two wars cooking. And you people don't understand the economics of this, nor do they care. As long as you people in New Orleans, as long as the government's pumping money in down here, you're happy. That's what they're doing. Keep your mind off of the ultimate end game. Same thing with the war in Iraq. As long as you people have got oil and gasoline, I saw the other day gasoline $2.63 a gallon. Hell, that gas ought to be $4 a gallon. Gasoline is artificially cheap at $2.63. Price of oil is over $70 a barrel. Hell, it was $3 a gallon when it was $60 a barrel. Remember when it topped 60? Hell, it's headed toward 80. I wouldn't be surprised, but you have $100 oil here by the end of the year. As the dollar weakens, you're going to have higher and higher oil prices. And this inflation, as it continues on, you're going to get wage increases. But your wage increase is 5% and inflation is 13%. So you take a steady, continuous degeneration in your purchasing power. And that's the inflation tax. So get used to it because there's more to come. So you can see over the next 40 years that this thing is turning turtle. But it's not going to last for 40 years. It's never lasted that long in the past. And so people write me letters every day and they say, well, when, Mr. Gordon, when is this going to happen? I remember I was talking to a student the other day and he said, you know, in 1999, remember when we were preparing for Y2K? And I said, yeah, I remember that. I still have my Y2K preparations here. And he said, you know, the people after Y2K were so disappointed that the computer system didn't crash that they were complaining about, well, what am I going to do with this generator now? I think I'll say they paid $1,000 for a generator and then they sold it for $300 to get rid of it. And I said, yeah, that wasn't very wise of them, because just because the world didn't come to an end in 2000 didn't mean that it's not going to come to an end in 2010 or 2020 or 2030. And the mentality of Americans, I can't speak for the rest of the world, but I'm telling you that from the mentality of Americans coming out of the Great Depression until at least 1950, started to change in the 50s, but at least until 1950, was debt-free and pay-as-you-go and fiscal responsibility. And then little by little, our government, you know, became fiscally irresponsible and spending more than they took in, and they gave us all these good things, and we loved it. We got used to it. I mean, we got used to buying things on time and paying for them on time. And so now today everybody's in hawk up to their eyeballs. And that's exactly what your government wants. It wants everybody in hawk up to their eyeballs so that when this thing goes upside down, they'll come in with the solution. They'll say, okay, what you need is a chip in your right hand and a chip in your forehead. And then we'll roll your notes over and then we'll solve your economic problems. And you people will line up to get your mark of the beast. You will line up. And I don't know who's going to be the president, but you'll say, well, thank God for President Bush because he saved my house. That's what they said about Franklin D. Roosevelt. Thank God for Franklin D. Roosevelt. He saved us from the Depression. Well, it wasn't Franklin Roosevelt that put you into the Depression, but it was Woodrow Wilson and the Federal Reserve Bank that did, and that was the Democrats. And then the Republicans, through Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover jumped right on the bandwagon, helped you spend yourselves into prosperity until it collapsed in 1928. And then when the stock market crashed in 29, and then when it hit bottom in 33, Roosevelt comes in and says, boy, I got a solution for you. Boy, we're going to get rid of this dirty gold stuff over here, and boy, we're going to fix everything. We're going to fix all your troubles, and you people lined up outside the banks to turn your gold in, to turn in your just weights and balances for the unjust weights and balances that the Roosevelt people had for you. And he introduced, by the way, the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto through House Joint Resolution 192 in 1933. Always remember, June 5th, 1933. That's when Roosevelt introduced the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. And from that point on, you threw the 10 commandments out, America. And now there's a consequence that comes from that. And you baby boomers who weren't even born, you didn't do this. Wasn't you. You came along in 1946, remember? 1954. And what your mommies and daddies did back in the 30s, what your grandma and granddaddy did back in the early days of the century, are now coming home to roost 100 years later. So, welcome to reality. So what about trust funds? Well, the Social Security and Medicare trust funds, yeah, they call these trust funds. I'm going to underline that in the report. And while I'm talking about report, if you'd like a copy of this report, it was, I don't have a number on here where it came off the web, but it was put out by John C. Goodman. He's the president of the National Center for Policy Analysis. And this is his testimony before the House Ways and Means Committee, which was delivered on Thursday, May 19th, 2005. If you want a copy of this report, what you do is just send me a letter. Send me a stamped, self-addressed letter so that I can copy this. About five pages. Let me see how many pages this is. Yeah, five pages. I'll copy it for you. There isn't more than 10 or 15 of you that are going to do it anyway. All the rest of you hear my words, but it doesn't register. Seeing, you cannot see, and hearing, you cannot hear, that this prophecy of Isaiah may come to pass, that this people's ears are dull of hearing. They can't grasp or understand what's going on around them. But you people will understand this. When it comes to pass, when the Titanic hits the iceberg, you will then come to understand the seriousness of the folly of believing that you could steam at 23 knots straight through 5,000 square miles of icebergs and miss them all. And that's what Captain Smith decided to do. He said, we're gonna light up the boilers. We're gonna increase our speed. We're gonna steer right through the middle of the icebergs and we're gonna miss them all. We're not gonna steer south around them and we're not gonna slow down. Well, okay, there was an inevitable outcome to that decision. We're going to set a new transatlantic record from Liverpool to New York. And we're going to do it on this this voyage. And the Titanic broke every record. I'm telling you, they broke every record. All right, this is John C. Goodman, president of the National Cancer for Policy Analysis, House Ways and Means Committee. Every member of Congress knows exactly what I'm telling you right now. They're not reporting it to you. You can rest assured that Katie Couric knows this, Brian Williams knows this, Charlie Gibson knows this, and all the editors of USA Today, the Washington Post, Los Angeles Times, the New York Times, Chicago Tribune, they all know this. It may be news to you, but everybody in the know knows what's coming. And those people are preparing for it. You know, as a percentage of the American population, it's about 5%. So about 5% of the people of America will be prepared when this thing turns turtle. The other 95% will be caught totally flat-footed. They will look around and say, what in the hell happened? They won't have a clue as to what just happened. But it will all be made very painfully clear to them as time progresses. So we have a thing here called trust funds, boys and girls. That trust fund is a damn lie, as old Mark Twain used to say. The Social Security and Medicare trust funds serve an accounting function, not an economic function. They work like this. When payroll tax revenues exceed expenses, special bonds are created to keep track of the surplus. These bonds are not purchased in the marketplace. For Social Security, they're created on paper and then placed in filing cabinets in Parkersburg, West Virginia. For Medicare, they are computer entries only. And while the actual surplus payroll tax dollars are spent by the federal government on other things, other things like the war in Iraq, like drug benefits, like building bridges in Minneapolis, like rebuilding New Orleans. When these tax revenues fall short of expenses, the process is reversed. The bonds are taken out of the filing cabinets and then retired. Now, the Social Security Trust Fund currently holds $1.6 trillion worth of these bonds, but the bonds cannot pay benefits. They cannot be sold on Wall Street or to foreign investors. And although they are treated as assets of the trust fund, they are also liabilities of the United States government. Summing over both agencies of government, assets plus liabilities net out to zero. And if the federal government had purchased assets with the Social Security surpluses, the trust funds would today represent real economic value. But instead, Social Security revenues were spent in other ways, and the government essentially wrote itself IOUs. So if a fire were to destroy the filing cabinets in Parkersburg, it would in no way diminish the capacity of the federal government to pay any of the benefits promised. Alternatively, if a stroke of the president's pen were to double or triple the number of bonds in those filing cabinets, that would in no way increase our ability to pay those benefits. If we could create value by writing IOUs to ourselves, Social Security would have no financial problems. But unfortunately, boys and girls, there's no free lunch. Those revenues from 1982 up until today have not been invested in anything. They just wrote up a bond and stuck it in there and said the federal government owes Social Security so many dollars. To pay those dollars out, you're going to have to raise taxes. You've already seen here that the number of people retiring and the number of people coming into the system at the current tax rate is going to require either you double the taxes to 32%, and boy, isn't that going to be real popular, or you have to cut the benefits, and that's even less popular. All right, so make up your minds. There's going to be some hard, hard results that come from it, not choices. The choices have already been made, but the results are going to really be tough. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to give you a final reminder here that you have been listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard worldwide over the Internet daily. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. And the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, please go to the homeschooling page on our website, georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. We're going to have to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.